Good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson, the car guru. Thank you for listening. I just had such a wonderful Father's Day weekend. It was semi-relaxing. You know, that's kind of a stretch when you have all these little ones running around. But it is fun. I mean, it can be relaxing. You know, I just decided to put everything else down and just quit trying to get done what I needed to get done and started focusing on them. And we had quite a good time. I actually played hide-and-seek in a 34-foot camper, and it's hard for a 215-pound, 6'3 guy to hide in a camper, but you know, those little kids act like they couldn't see me. Wouldn't it be great to be a kid again? Every now and then, I think it's important for us to return there, at least mentally. Well, I am headed to Birmingham, Alabama today, this afternoon, with my daughter, Abby. We are going to Strong Automotive, which is our advertising agency, and we go down there and we do 6 months worth of television commercials. Does that sound like a lot of work? Well, it is. When we get done, we are exhausted. We just basically record these little snippets, and we already know basically what our marketing themes are going to be, you know, as the year goes on. I mean, you know, things really don't change that much. What changes is the actual inventory that we have and what we have to sell. So we know the general marketing messages that are required in the month of, you know, November, for example, or Christmas time and stuff like that. It's typically, I mean, it's just history just keeps repeating itself. And those messages are, you know, I guess consistent over time. But it's so fun to have an agency like this that can take all of that input and turn it into content on television and make it look interesting. So Strong Automotive does our commercials and very proud to work with them. Now, you know, I could have lied, I guess, and told you that all of this creativity is from the mind of the guru, but it's not. But like I say, we do, what changes is the availability of product. And that's still going to be an issue going forward. We know that. We're still taking a lot of orders, you know, for cars and folks that, you know, want something that they just need to order it. And in some cases that works out well. In others, it takes a year to get something or longer. I mean, we had situations last year that, really for the last 2 years that where customers would order things and we had no clue when they were coming in. Now it's getting a little bit more definition to it, but still on certain vehicle lines, it's difficult. So, you know, if you want to buy a Honda or a Toyota or a Nissan or a, you know, you just need to go to your local dealer that you feel comfortable with and you really like and sit down and have an honest conversation with them. One thing I would not do is just rely totally on what the salesperson knows because they aren't aware of all of the different constraints. And Ford calls them commodities. That means that there are certain commodities that are not available due to, you know, things that are going on with suppliers or whatever. Chevrolet calls them constraints. I don't know what the other manufacturers call them. You know, as far as a domestic dealer, if you are a Ford dealer or a GM dealer or a Chrysler dealer, you order your vehicles pretty much the way you want them, and then the factory builds them based on an order. The Japanese and the Koreans and a lot of the other makers, well, Germans, you know, BMWs, sometimes they are ordered for stock, but Porsche, Audi, a lot of those makers, you do order vehicles. The dealer orders them exactly the way he wants them, or they order them for the consumer. It's not that way with the Japanese imports and the Korean imports. They are, even though they're built in the United States, you can't just order what you want. One of the reasons for that, I guess, is because the import manufacturers have really eliminated a lot of the choices. They package things together. There's far fewer options that are available. They have option packages, but even those are limited. I was wanting to get a new truck for my wife. Yeah, she needs a truck. She drives around town and she's always hauling stuff for our daughters and grandkids, and she does a lot of volunteer stuff. And so, you know, she uses a small truck. She'll go to the plant store or to Lowe's or something, and I drive my F-150 all the time. So she said, I really need a truck. So I bought her a Nissan, and but it was black. It was the only one we had with the equipment that I thought she would want and that I want. And so we I got it, but it was black. And I didn't like it when I bought it because it was black. And just hard to keep clean and hot. You know how black colors are. So I just traded it yesterday. I traded it for a gray, which is going to be easier to keep clean. Same options. And looking at the values, this is now this is the time, sign of the times. The 2021 with, I mean, granted, it only has 2,000 miles on it, but the used 2021 is worth more by book value than the MSRP is on the new one. So theoretically, we should be paying, if you buy a vehicle and drive it for a year, you bring it back in, we should pay you more than you paid for it and actually pay you money to take the new one off of our hands. Now, does it work that way? No, it doesn't, because, you know, the book values and stuff, you can't really trust those values. You have to take that with a grain of salt. We know that if somebody comes onto the lot and they want to buy a new vehicle, and we have a used one sitting right beside it, they're going to want to pay less for the used one, wouldn't you? It's been titled and so forth. But the whole depreciation model that has been around, you know, for eons as far as cars are concerned, doesn't apply anymore. I don't know when it's going to give. It's going to be sometime within the next 2 years probably. But cars, used cars will start depreciating again. But I don't think they are to the extent that they used to, because the manufacturers, unless they, I don't know, completely change what they say they're going to do, they are not going to flood the market with cars. You're not going to see 500 Chevrolets on a Chevrolet dealer's lot in Johnson City. It's just not going to happen. They're going to keep the day supply down, because by keeping the day supply down, they don't have to incentivize people to buy cars. They don't have to pay, you know, a $5,000 to $10,000 rebate to get somebody to buy something. I mean, that's where rebates come from. It's to control inventories and day supply. So you're also not going to – well, you might see, you know, 0% financing and things like that. And you're going to hear dealers talk about, you know, paying way over book value for trades and stuff like that. But that is just such a sketchy game, you know, when it comes to values are concerned. So, you know, the best thing for you to do if you're in the market for a car is go order it. And before you do, make sure you get some type of a ballpark commitment as what your trade-in is going to be worth in 3 months. And I would look at it in like quarterly intervals, like, because it could be delayed, I don't know, where it would normally take 6 to 8 weeks for a vehicle to come in. I mean, it may take 6 months. Now, is your vehicle that you're driving now going to be worth what it is today 6 months from now? Probably not. I don't think it's going to be worth more as the shortages, the chip shortages and all the other shortages start to mitigate a little bit. You're going to find some the depreciation curve to come back to a degree. But I still think that the shortage of used cars is going to be very acute. It's getting worse now. My lot is emptier than normal. We've got a lot of we got a few Nissans coming in, a few Fords, and we're selling them pretty much as fast as they come in. So it's all the better for you to go ahead and order something. When you do, you know, sometimes the dealers will require a deposit. You know, we don't unless it's really something odd. Now, when you order something online, I think occasionally they will require a deposit, but it's typically $100. Like if you want to order a Bronco today, for example, we wouldn't require any deposit. You just come down and order what you want. You know, the truth of the matter is if you don't take it, that's fine. We'll sell it to somebody else. That's kind of the way we look at it. So get you something ordered. If you want something, so this is June, getting near July. If you want something around Christmas, don't count on it as a Christmas present because it may not get here, but it's possible that it does. Certain lines are tighter than others, and you need to not, like I said, I don't know if I finished this point, but don't just rely on what the salesperson is telling you. Talk to the managers, talk to the guys who order the vehicles, and get the, get the truth, okay? Say, listen, I don't want to play games. I don't want you telling me it's going to be here in 2 months or 3 months when you know good and well that that's not a sure thing. Just tell me the truth. And, you know, some people are reluctant to do that because they don't want you to turn around and walk out. But it's better that they be honest with you. You can prepare for that. You know, you don't know what your vehicle is going to be worth at that time, but you can get a ballpark figure of what it's worth now. And just understand that when it comes in, it's probably will have depreciated. You can track it. Call them every month, for that matter, and say, well, how much has my vehicle gone down in value? Well, it hadn't gone down any. Well, that's good news. But that's not always going to be the case. Okay, I'm going to take my first break and be back here in just a second. So it wasn't too long ago that a customer came in the showroom and said, well, Lenny, it looks like Ford's going to put you out of business. And I said, well, how's that? I said, well, from what I've read or what I've heard on the news, right there's the first problem. What I've heard on the news is that Ford is going to stop selling electric vehicles through the dealerships because dealers are overcharging for them, like the new Lightning pickup truck. There have been some pretty bad cases of price gouging on the Lightning pickup truck. We don't do that. We sell them for MSRP to our sold orders. And but some dealers are really gouging. But obviously the news reports, I knew the news reports were wrong. We had representatives, friends of mine, that were at the NADA convention where Ford announced to dealers what they were doing. They were dividing their business into the internal combustion engine division and the EV, the electric vehicle division. Now, I personally think that the EV, this whole thing that we're that's all you see, right? Electric cars and stuff like that, that it is completely overblown, and we are a good 5 to 10 years away from this thing really being all over the place because of one thing. It's not the vehicles. They can build the vehicles. They're expensive, but they can build them. They just can't charge them, you know, when they're on the road. And that's going to be the big issue. But Ford is definitely up in their investment in electric vehicle training at dealers. They're also issuing demo models for dealerships. And they have completely dropped an idea to give EV buyers a, I couldn't believe they were thinking about this, a 7-day return option. I mean, should you need a return option? I mean, if you got your big boy and girl pants on, and you go in and buy a vehicle, I don't think you should have to be able to take it back. Personally, it's a big investment. What's the dealer supposed to do with that car? I mean, yeah, you take back your pants that you bought at Joseph Bank, but don't take back a vehicle, for goodness sake. But anyway, I see a couple dealers doing that on used cars, an exchange privilege. Yeah, just try to see what happens when you try to exchange it. It's not going to work out real like you think. But anyway, Ford is largely sticking with its plans to have dealerships sell EVs using a new set of standards that would involve them keeping no inventory on site. You know, that's not necessarily a bad thing for me because then I don't have the carrying cost. It makes my 5.5-acre lot look rather empty. Also, they're going to have dealers set non-negotiable prices and offer customers the ability to complete their purchase online. Now, apparently these millennials and younger, they like online. They order everything from Amazon or, you know, if it's online, they feel good about it. If it's face-to-face and they have to actually interact with human beings, they don't much like that. That's not everybody, I realize. I hope I didn't insult anybody, but it just seems that way. But according to Ford executives and dealers familiar with the discussions, which I am, Ford entered the talks floating the concept of a one-week buyback period for EVs, but that is not going to happen. And then the division of the Ford company, basically in to the electric division and the internal combustion engine division, is going to happen. I don't know what the standards are going to be. As far as showroom, hopefully they won't make me build any more showroom. I've had to do a lot of that lately. But I'm all for modernizing the sales experience. I think we are long overdue. It's just, there's too many jicky salespeople and, car business folk still out there that want to do it the old school way, and they're just resisting, and you know, and I think that's to their peril. I just don't know how a lot of dealers are going to market themselves. You know, we're really nice people. Come buy from us. I don't know how motivational that is. You know, it's always been price. And, you know, now the big hooks are, you know, 0% financing, which there's not much of that around anymore since the Fed has jacked up all the rates on everybody. 0% financing, but, you know, big rebates. Well, those are gone, so you can't talk about rebates. About the only thing that dealers can talk about now are trade allowances. You know, get top dollar for your trade. Remember, what does that mean? Top dollar. There's a dealer in Johnson City saying, we'll pay you $8,000 over book value for your trade. There's one doing $7,500. I was thinking about doing, I'm going to pay you $25,000 over book value for your trade. Up to. That's in the fine print. It says up to. But that's what they're doing. And I said, you know, if they're doing it, maybe I should, but I would never do that. You know, that's so deceptive. Nobody's going to get $8,000 over real book value for their trade. Now, some fake book value, you know, if they take their factory window sticker on their car and jack it up about $8,000, then can they give you $8,000 over book value for your trade and still get MSRP out of the vehicle? They sure can. That's pretty easy math. If I mark up something $8,000 and then turn around and give it to you as a discount, I haven't really given you anything. That's somewhat deceptive, isn't it? I'll tell you what's not deceptive is the fact that my F-150 saved me a bunch of money the other day. I was backing up, and it stopped. It always catches me off guard because I think I've run into something already, but it's actually the car has applied the brakes and kept me from running into something. And it happened to be my side-by-side in my driveway. You know what a side-by-side is? It's like one of those four-wheel off-road vehicles. Like a four-wheeler, except you can sit in it. Like a golf cart. Okay, you up to speed? Yeah, I almost totaled my side-by-side with my F-150. But it stopped. There's been a lot of neat technologies. Recent innovations include the automatic emergency braking, which, you know, saved me. Forward collision warning. Blind spot detection and other capabilities. You know, the cross traffic alert is saving a lot of lives too. That's where it sees traffic coming from the left and the right, maybe before you do. And if it looks like you're going to be running into it and they're not slowing down, you'll get this big warning light on your dash. I think that's a great thing. I love the automatic braking on the front too, because I have so many times I have done very bad driving in that I wasn't paying attention to what I learned in driver's ed. And that's when you pull up to a yield sign and there's a car in front of you, don't look to see if any cars are coming. Just keep your eye on the car in front of you. When he pulls out and completely pulls out of the way, then you go. Because I can't tell you how many people I've almost run into because I start looking. I see them start to go. And so I look back again and take off and they're still sitting there. Because they decided again it. And so almost rear-ended them. That never happened to me, but it may have happened to you, though. But this, the new Nissans, the new, you know, there's other products that do it too, but the new Fords, they'll stop. You know, they'll just slam on the brakes and won't even shame you for it. You know, a lot of the crash avoidance features are based on an array of sensors that basically are cameras, and also they use radar and radio waves. One type of sensor that has proved to expand and enhance really crash avoidance capabilities has not really been out there that much yet, and it's called light detection and ranging, or LIDAR. And it can see at the speed of light and in all lighting conditions, including dusk and at night. LIDAR can be used in vehicles and in infrastructure settings, lampposts, traffic lights, that kind of stuff, to enable additional capabilities that include congestion mitigation. Wouldn't that be wonderful if the traffic lights and the light poles along the side of the road could be in communication with cars in order to keep traffic jams and pileups and stuff from happening? That would be wonderful. Now, a lot of people think that LIDAR is an essential component of any vehicle safety technology that is intended to detect and avoid people's. LIDAR basically is its own light source and can function with equal performance in light or dark conditions, as I said, and also in degraded visual conditions where a lot of other sensors fall short, such as even direct sunlight. That sunlight can interfere with the sensors on your car to be able to see what's going on. LIDAR also has the resolution necessary to detect and identify pedestrians even when they are not moving. Smart computers, lots of things that LIDAR is going to make possible, including the self-driving car. We're not there yet. Tesla thinks their human guinea pigs are willing to keep dying for their benefit so that they can improve their system of cameras and radio waves. But no, LIDAR is going to be the answer if we're going to get to any type of self-driving capability. And I'm all in favor. I mean, if I'm, you know, driving to, I don't like the drive to Chattanooga. You know, it's not like I have anything against Knoxville or, you know, all of those other towns between, you know, Lenoir City and Athens and all that stuff. I just don't like the drive. And I would just soon read a newspaper. And maybe this self-driving technology would make that possible for me. I don't know. Okay, I'll take my last break. Be back here in just a minute. Okay, well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru. This weather has been wonderful. It almost feels like fall. I hope it continues. And I hope that next week it doesn't rain any in Hilton Head, because that's where I'll be. But I'll still have plenty of shows for you to listen to and hopefully some information that you can use and enjoy. And I will see you tomorrow.